The following is a lecture by Rabbi David Kaplan. Rabbi Kaplan is originally from Chicago. He attended Northeastern University and received his rabbinical ordination in Jerusalem. He has lectured widely in Israel and America and is currently a senior lecturer at the main campus in Jerusalem.
This is probably going to be as, I guess the word would be linear as we're going to get. Is that we're going to go through, basically, many of you are familiar with Shabbos, some of you are not. You'll forgive me if we repeat some of the things you know, but I can't do a mitzvah series without going through Shabbos. It's too fundamental. Some of the things I'm sure you will not have known. There's some interesting ideas about Shabbos. Let's take a look. The Torah commands, I have written down here the first source in the Torah, which is the Ten Commandments. Shabbos is so fundamental, it even appears in the Ten Commandments. The Torah repeats the warnings, the discussions about Shabbos 12 times. Now, the Talmud says that God came to Moshe, and God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to go and inform the Jewish people that I'm giving them a precious gift, Matana Tova, a precious gift that I'm giving to the Jewish people, and this gift is called Shabbos. Now, any of you that have experienced Shabbos, that have experienced a genuine Shabbos, keeping the Shabbos with a Torah family, so it's very important to understand why is Shabbos so fundamental. When I think of Judaism, when almost anybody thinks of observance, Shabbos is what you think of. The definition, and when you want to get into technically, the definition of an observant Jew is a Jew who keeps Shabbos. It's rare to find a Jew that keeps kosher but doesn't keep Shabbos, right? A Jew that keeps kosher, you can find without keeping Shabbos. A Jew that keeps Shabbos but doesn't keep kashrus is very rare, right? Shabbos is it's almost the cutoff line between determining whether somebody is observant or not. When we say observant of Shabbos, it means somebody who makes every effort to keep Shabbos. Everybody makes mistakes. Once in a while, you throw a light switch without having intended to, or you pick a tomato out of your salad and you forgot that you weren't allowed to do that, right? Or whatever it is that you do. Do you know that somebody once, one of the rabbeimer told me, he knew a guy who became committed to Judaism because of that halacha. The halacha that you're not allowed to pick, you know the halacha you're not allowed to separate the bad from the good on Shabbos? So everybody's been inspired. I've met people who were inspired to become observant because of the laws of Lashon Hara. We know people who are inspired by the fact that we make so many brachas. Here's a guy who was inspired because of the law that you're not allowed to pull your cucumbers out of a salad. Right? So they ask, what about this law inspired you to become observant? Right? That you're convinced of the authenticity of Torah. He said, no human being would or could care less if you pull your cucumbers out of your tomatoes out of your cucumbers. Right? No human mind, Stephen King couldn't have made up a halacha to not pull cucumbers out of a salad, right? The only mind, the only one that could have come up with such an idea is HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Shabbos is the Gemara called the precedent. That's very important because I've done this experiment several times with groups. What would you do? Let's say you have to design a formula. Leave God. Forget, I don't want to say, leaving God out of the picture for a moment, right? Let's say you were going to design a formula. What is your goal in life? What is every human being's goal in life? Every human being's goal in life is either what people call happiness, contentment, fulfillment, one or the other. Very few people will tell you their goal in life is to be miserable. Everybody's goal in life is to find some sort of happiness or contentment. I think in Zen Buddhism, the goal of life, I once read a book about different religions in Zen. There are different forms of Zen, but the book that I read described it as Zen's philosophy is that life is a drag, and what we want to do is cease to exist. And you can't cease to exist by committing suicide, because if you commit suicide, you're just reincarnated. So you have to achieve a state of perfection where you absolutely cease to exist. You, your soul, and any type signs that you ever existed. That's why they don't put flowers on the grave, because there's no one to appreciate it anyway. The soul has completely and utterly ceased to exist. We don't believe in that. Everybody you meet, their goal in life is to achieve a certain state of contentment or fulfillment. Now, if you were going to design your own formula for fulfillment in life, happiness in life, and you had to write a list of priorities, what would your number one priority be? Now, this always gets two answers. There's always two answers that appear. What would your number one priority be to achieve fulfillment in life, right? So the two answers are always, think about it for a second, what would you put down, right? The two answers are always either health, which is not so much in our control, or family, which is to a certain extent more in our control. Now, in Torah lifestyle, the one mitzvah which is central to building a solid family foundation is Shabbos observance. What happens on Shabbos, the family, you've seen it, but it's worth repeating. A family is forced, whether they like it or not, they're forced to sit down at a table three times in the course of 24 hours, whereas you can have the possibility, people are busy during the week, everybody's working, this one's got basketball practice, and she's got cheerleader practice, and art class, and this, and father's working, and the mother's busy. Shabbos forces everybody to get in the same cage together three times in the course of 24 hours, and we're going to communicate. And what that does is, they once, Jeff Seidel is the original Jeff Seidel, is Rabbi Schuster. I don't know if you've met him. Rabbi Schuster was the man who used to patrol the wall before Jeff Seidel came along. And Rabbi Schuster once picked a guy up. His name was Timothy Ridgway. Rabbi Schuster picked him up at the wall and took him to a house for Shabbos, for Friday night. And then afterwards he said to him, so what did you think? And he said, hey, it's pretty neat. It's like having Christmas every week. That's what the guy said. And that means that his experience in life, when does the family get together and sit around and communicate with everybody's home and nobody's watching, everybody's sitting around the table? It happens once a year. It happens on the holiday. In Judaism, that happens every single week. Every single week, the family sits around. Now, my argument is, it's not the right reason to become observant. Certainly not. But if your priority in life, on your list, if your priority for fulfillment and contentment in life is to have successful family relationships, even if you don't believe in God, and even if you don't believe in Torah, it's worth every sacrifice to achieve that. Right? Now, obviously, we do believe in God. But even if I didn't believe in God, I would still keep Shabbos. Because Shabbos provides me with something that even if it weren't true, so what if it's not true? Why should I change it? I enjoy the system anyway. So the first idea of Shabbos is there's the idea of family and communication. Any of you who've worked, you've all, what do you think of? What's the first thing? It's unfortunate. What's the first thing when we think of Shabbos? What's the first thing we think of? Don't. Shabbos means don't, right? Don't this, don't that, don't turn on the lights, don't drive, don't answer the phone, don't turn on the television. Shabbos is a series of don'ts, right? And that's what we think of as Shabbos of don't. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create Shabbos that way? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu design a day? Might not make it much more relaxing. Might not make it a day where you could stay home. The first thing is don't work. Don't go to work on Shabbos. That don't will keep. But you could turn on lights and you could watch television. Wouldn't that be so much more relaxing and so much more enjoyable? So the idea here is that there's a restriction. I once owned a business before I... In my previous life, I owned a business, and I part owned the business. It was a restaurant. And one of the things, at the time I was keeping Shabbos, one of the things Shabbos provided me with was a certain sense of relaxation that anyone in that business could not possibly have had if they didn't keep Shabbos. On Shabbos, you always have the potential of somebody, even if you go on vacation, you could have a doctor, right? A doctor goes to the beach, right? Runs around with a beeper. Right, or anybody who's in business runs around. You always got a beeper. When I was growing up, nowadays probably have these the telephones, right? When I was growing up, if you had a beeper, that was you've made it, right? You walk around with a beeper hooked onto your pants, and then you've made it. Somebody who's working and has a beeper or a telephone can always be reached. Your vacation, your relaxation, your mental frame of mind could be broken in an instant. In one instant, somebody could call you up and tell you, "You better get down here quick. There's a fire." On Shabbos, where you've got the prohibitions built in, which we'll explain why in a second, you have these prohibitions, and they give you that, they give you the opportunity to completely break all ties with what you're doing during the work week, to give you that mental relaxation which would otherwise be impossible. Somebody who's working very often falls into what we'll call the rat race. You have no time to reflect on yourself, reflect on something a little deeper, more spiritual. Shabbos certainly provides plenty of time to go to shul, to daven a little bit, to learn, and to spiritually recharge oneself. We have an obligation on Shabbos to enjoy Shabbos. That's why we eat what's called three meals a day. We start at night, we eat a couple the next day, and we are to get rewarded for this pleasure that we get on Shabbos, to demonstrate that Shabbos is a day of relaxation. Now, you've all heard of the extra neshama, what's called the neshama yisera. There are different explanations for what the neshama yisera is. Some of them physical, some of them spiritual. The spiritual idea is that there is some type of channel between us and God. God is constantly channeling spirituality to us during the rest of the week. The faucet is closed a little bit. The flow is not as smooth. Shabbos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu opens up the tap and allows more of that spirituality to reach us. That's on a spiritual level. It's even explained as the state, like the Talmud explains it, as a state of relaxation. Do you ever notice on Shabbos you could consume amounts that would normally defy human imagination? On Shabbos you could sit down at a table, and just when you think that you're at the point where you're at the point of no return, the hostess brings out something else, some other heaping tray of something, right? And then you eat it again, right? You eat and you eat and you eat. There are commentaries that explain that the neshama yisera, what we call the extra neshama, doesn't mean we become schizophrenic on Shabbos. Neshama yisera means the extra neshama, the extra soul, means we reach a state of such relaxation. When you're totally relaxed, that's when you're able to eat more. When you're nervous, you're tight, you can't eat as much. The neshama yisera is this state of relaxation that we're trying to achieve on Shabbos. That's the idea of being able to, one of the ideas of being able to eat so much on Shabbos. Now, what's with all the prohibitions? Right, let's get down to it. Why can't we do it? First of all, what can't we do? So the translation of activity on Shabbos, what's prohibited? What does the Torah say? Lo sasa kol melacha. What's melacha? What's melacha?
Category of prohibited work.
Category of prohibited work. To call it work is not entirely accurate. Because on Shabbos, if I take a pen and I write two letters on Shabbos, the Beis Hamikdash were standing and there were witnesses that were to warn me beforehand, what would my punishment be? Stoning. Yet the same person could take a chair, put it up on a table and take it down, put it up and take it down. What's more strenuous? Much more strenuous to take a chair, put it up and down. Strenuous is not the standard by which it's measured. The measure for prohibited activity on Shabbos is prohibited creative activity. You cannot even call it work. Any type of creative activity is what's prohibited on Shabbos. There are 39 categories of prohibited activity. I don't want to go into the technical halachas, what is allowed, what's not allowed. That's not what I want to do right now. That's a different time to study the laws of Shabbos. What is prohibited, though, are 39 categories of creative activity. Now, why is it that these are prohibited? The only way God creates man, gives man a world. He says to man, take this world and do whatever you want with the world. Very easy for man to fall into the trap of using the world for his own selfish means. That the world becomes an ends instead of a means of achieving closeness to the Creator. God comes along and says, one day a week, I want you to acknowledge that I gave you the world and the world is mine. How do you acknowledge it? You acknowledge that by taking a step back and limiting yourself. You are not allowed to engage in any external creative activity. That means we are acknowledging the fact, we are saying to God, the world is yours, we cannot make use of the world unless you give us permission to. What type of creative activity is permissible on Shabbos? Internal creativity. What's internal creativity? We have to get in touch with ourselves. We have to get in touch with what's inside us. You know that there's a halacha that on Shabbos, marital relations is an extra mitzvah on Shabbos. A married couple, for them to engage in marital relations on Shabbos, is an extra mitzvah even more than during the week. Why? Part of the idea is this idea of internal creativity. There's no greater internal creativity. No, a human being cannot create from within in any more potent way than bringing a child into the world. It is the greatest form of creative activity, and that is the symbol of the underlying theme of Shabbos, that Shabbos is where we're supposed to create within, not making use of the external environment. Now, I'm sure that you're aware of fences on Shabbos, right? A word muktzah, right? Something is, oh, don't touch it, it's muktzah. Muktzah means that it's been designated for prohibition. There's Shabbos and laws of kashrus for which has more rabbinical fences. Many of the laws, many of the prohibitions on Shabbos revolve around the rabbinical prohibitions. The fact that the rabbis felt that since these laws are so easily transgressed, we have to keep the people farther back from transgressing. So, for instance, you're not allowed to, not only the Torah prohibition is to write on Shabbos. What aren't we allowed to do? You're not even allowed to pick up a pen. You're not allowed to move a pen. You're allowed to do certain things. Let's say I want to pick up a pen to scratch my back. Right, there are certain prohibitions, certain leniencies, certain permitted uses of prohibited utensils. I can pick up. Am I allowed to use a hammer on Shabbos? Not allowed to use a hammer. Right. What if I want to crack? I have a walnut. I want to crack it open. If I use a hammer to crack it open, yes, I could. Right, and so on and so forth. You get all these technical halakhas that you get into. On the other hand, the laws are set up in such a way that we cannot become sidetracked. We have to focus, look inside ourselves, and we have to relate to our family members. That's the idea of all the prohibitions. It's unfortunate that nowadays, because we are so dominated by machines, telephones, tape recorders, so on and so forth, we can't imagine, my goodness, how could I be away from my television for 24 hours? You know, technically you'd be able to leave the television on a time clock for 24 hours, technically. It's not within the spirit of the law to watch television on Shabbos. But if you just can't make it through Shabbos without television, by the letter of the law, you can leave your television on a time clock. You can leave your heat. The electricity could be on a time clock. Electricity is perfectly okay. Leave your electricity on what's called a Shabbos clock. It goes on and off on Shabbos the way you time it. Okay? You get the question a little while. Okay? Now, let's just go through the steps of the day a little bit. First of all, how do we usher in Shabbos? We usher in Shabbos with the candle lighting. Now, the men are at shul, and you notice that at shul we go to daven, and at Friday night at the Kabbalat Shabbat prayers, which are very Kabbalistic, I'm sure you got all the lowdown on it in Sfat, but at a certain point, we all turn around, everybody in the shul turns around, we face the doorway to welcome in the Shabbos queen. That's what the men are doing in shul. What are the women doing at home? So, the candle lighting ceremony, which is one of the most famous ceremonies in Judaism, one of the ceremonies that people, even as distantly detached as they are, it's one of the things that many people still keep. The women light the candles in the home. Now, what's the idea, first of all, of lighting the candles? Why do we light the candles? In the old days, there are three basic ideas behind the candle. First of all, the candle brings in a lot of light into the home. We think of candles nowadays, we think of these mass-produced wax candles, which you could get anywhere. In the old days, to make a candle was very expensive. You had to make your own candle, and a candle, first of all, brought in more light into the home. In the old days, people lived their day from sunrise to sunset. They went to sleep very early. They went to sleep at 7 o'clock at night or 8 o'clock at night so that they could get up early and maximize natural daylight because you didn't want to use artificial light. It was very expensive. There was no Letterman. They didn't stay up late at night. 8 o'clock at night, they were in bed. They got up at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. 4 o'clock in the morning, the day began. When the sun came up, that's when the day began. The candle bringing in more light into the house. The more light there is, the more enjoy. You walk into a room and it's dark. The first thing you ask for is more light. It's annoying to be in the dark. So idea number one is that the light, the abundance of light, is more pleasurable. Idea number two, there's a concern that on Shabbos, of all days in the week, you want to avoid fighting, right? Shabbos is a special day. You want to avoid fighting as much as you want to avoid it during the rest of the week. The concern is that somebody in the house, because the house is dark, somebody will walk into the house and smack their leg on a chair or on a table or a stumble, and that can create a fight. Why did you put it there? Why did you leave it there? Therefore, they instituted that the candles have to be lit. Neither of these reasons apply nowadays. Nowadays, any candles that you have are not going to be as strong as fluorescent lights or any type of lights that you have in your home. There is the third reason, however, it does apply nowadays. What does a candle symbolize? Anytime you want to show a feeling of importance for the meal. You want to convey an idea that the meal that you're serving is an important, it's an important occasion. So even with lights, you still light candles on the table. Nowadays, that applies as well. And therefore, the main reason we light the candles nowadays is to show the importance of what it is we're doing, the importance, the significance of the Shabbos meal. Who lights the candles? The wife lights the candles. Now, why is it her job? So, you know the verse that says, forgive me for sounding like a frog, my voice is on the way out. We may have to end early today. I know you'll be bitterly disappointed. But there's a verse that says, Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. God's candle is man's soul. Right? Man's soul is compared to a candle. We find that all the time. There's the analogy between the soul and flame. Who is it that brought death to the world? And while doing so, managed to extinguish man's soul. Man was supposed to live forever. Man was supposed to live forever. Who, so to speak, extinguished this light by bringing death to the world? Adam. Who really did it? Chava was the wife, right? She's the one who incited him to eat from the fruit. She was the inciter in the Avera. Therefore, since she's the one that extinguished God's candle, she's the one who has the job every week. It's going to be her job to rekindle this candle. Now, you'll notice that when the wife lights the candle, you ever see the hand motion? Mm-hmm. She lights the candle and she does like this, right? She lights it, she does like this, and then she covers her eyes, right? It's one of the first things children notice. When he has children to imitate any type of religious ritual in the home, at 2 years old, they're already doing, show mommy lighting the candle, right? They're already doing like this. What is the idea of covering the eyes? The woman, it has to do with a technical halacha. You're not allowed to get any benefit from something until you make a blessing. She does not make a blessing on the candle lighting until after she's lit the candles. Because for her, the minute she makes the blessing, it's Shabbos. So if she were to make the blessing and then light the candles, she'd be lighting candles on Shabbos. She lights the candles, and then in order to stop herself from benefiting from the candles, what does she do? She puts her hands over her eyes, and then she makes the blessing. So why does she go like this? There's actually no reason that I found for it, right? It just adds a little bit of drama to the ceremony. The women enjoy doing it. We love them, so we let them have their fun. But there is no reason that I found in any of the commentaries for any significance. Everybody offers all sorts of, well, the world goes in cycles and stuff like that, right? If the family's around watching mommy light the candles, mommy has a little chance, she's in the spotlight, is exactly what they want, right? She's in the spotlight, right? And then she goes like this, and everybody, and she's welcoming, could be, she's welcoming the Shabbos, I just hope she doesn't put out the candles while she waves her hands, right? That could be, and there are all sorts of reasons are given. The bottom line is that there is no source for it that I have found. For it doesn't say anywhere that she has to wave her hands. If that's what she's thinking, that's wonderful. And then she covers her eyes. That's the idea of the ceremony. Then there's also the tribute we pay the women at when we come home from shul, that we sing the Eishes Chayil. Right, the Eishes Chayil is the last chapter in Proverbs. It's a description. It's the husband's praise for his wife for being such a wise. All the compliments in the book, but the women aren't allowed to sing, right? That they're not allowed to do. But the men sing the song of praise to the women. It's allegorically a song dedicated to Torah, right? Don't tell your mother that when you're singing it, right? It's actually a song. It has to do with our relationship with Torah, but on a basic level, it has to do with the husband's appreciation for what his wife has been doing for him during the course of the week. Now, Kiddush. All of you have been at Kiddush. A couple of important ideas that you have to be aware of. First of all, Kiddush is a basic declaration of allegiance to God. It's the Jewish people declaring that we believe that God took us out of Egypt and God created the world and took us out of Egypt. A basic restatement of our faith, which is made every single Friday night. Any of you who are troubled by the fact that we make a claim that we are the chosen people, any of you who are troubled by such a claim should stand up the next time you're at somebody's house on Friday night and protest, because that's what Kiddush talks about. Kiddush talks about Asher b'charbonu mikol ha'amim, how God chose us from all the nations, right? If you're following it in the English Siddur and you have a problem, just raise your hand and say, I object, right? I disagree, right? If you have any problem, be aware of what it is you're listening to, right? Besides getting to the food, that's what you're listening to. You're listening to a declaration by the entire Jewish population, that we are the chosen people. Now, the idea of wine, why do we make Kiddush over wine? I'm sure you've heard a lot of ideas about wine already. It's a very, very interesting idea I heard from Rabbi Mileski. Wine symbolizes all physical pleasures. Like wine is always used as the symbol of, it's the peak of physical pleasures, and it's always used to enhance any type of party. It's not wine, so some type of alcoholic beverage. When we're immersed in the physical world, the surest sign that we've given up the battle, what's the sure sign? We're always battling the physical. We always have a Yetzer Hara. We're contending with the Yetzer Hara, constantly trying to overcome. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose, but we're always battling with the evil inclination. What is the surest sign that we throw up our hands and we give up the fight against the Yetzer Hara? The surest sign of giving into the physical world is getting drunk. Getting drunk means I give up, you've won, I'm yours, right? Wherever you take me, that's where I will go, right? The sign of that defeat at the hands of the physical world is wine or alcohol. Shabbos, we want to demonstrate that we control the physical doesn't control us. So how do we begin the day? We begin the day with a cup of wine to show we are going to elevate the physical, symbolized by this cup of wine. No coincidence. How do we end the day? We ended at Havdalah with a cup of wine. That symbolizes that our re-entry into the physical world is going to be, if you go in, if you end Shabbos at the same state that you began Shabbos, Shabbos has been wasted. Somehow, doesn't mean therefore you don't have to keep Shabbos. It means that you've missed a golden opportunity of a certain growth. Somehow, through the course of Shabbos, we are meant to reach a higher state and then tackle the next week in that elevated state. The wine at Havdalah symbolizes that re-entry into the physical world in an elevated state. That's the idea of the wine at Kiddush. Now, your mitzvah, we're going to get technical for a second. When you're sitting at the table and somebody's making Kiddush, your mitzvah is to hear every word of Kiddush, and then you are not allowed to speak until the majority of the cup has been drunk. Once the majority of the cup has been drunk, which is usually done by whoever it is making Kiddush, if the person making Kiddush is in the know, he should drink immediately the majority of the cup so that if anybody talks, they won't have to remake Kiddush. You fulfill your obligation by having heard Kiddush and then seen him drink the majority of the cup. After that, it becomes a mitzvah for you to taste a little bit of the wine. That's why he pours a little wine around the table. Everybody gets a little bit of wine. It's interesting. People turn squeamish here, right? How could I drink, you know, somebody's drunk from that cup? You know, how could I drink any of that wine? Isn't it gross? And he drinks and he pours wine. I've heard this complaint many times, right? How could I drink? Somebody else drunk from the cup, right? If I gave you $10, you would drink, right? For $10, you do a lot of things, a lot more gross, right? So for a mitzvah of tasting a little bit of Kiddush wine on Shabbos, it's worth a little bit of self-sacrifice. If you know that you have guests at the table who are going to be repulsed by the fact that they have to drink some of the wine that your mouth has touched, so you can, as an act of consideration, you can pour off the wine for yourself before drinking. When I have a cold, I don't feel well, so I pour off the wine before passing it around. I've heard this, you know, I couldn't have made these things up myself. Right? I've heard this complaint many times. Like, isn't it gross? I've heard it all the time. Right? So no, it's nothing gross about it at all. If you're really bothered, so just ask for a little wine. After you've had some wine, you could always ask your host or hostesses for a little bit more wine. You want to drink down a little bit. Tell your host, sound firm about it. Right? Now, you know, I please, cup, a little more spirituality, please. Thank you. Right? And feel free to ask, and you could drink. Put yourself, that's part of the idea, by the way. Part of the idea is that God tells a man who's been working hard all week, I want you to come home Friday night and turn spiritual. A guy's been loading boxes on a truck all week. Now, how's he supposed to come home at one night, supposed to come home and turn spiritual? So Kodesh Baruch Hu says, the Torah comes along and says, we'll give you a little bit of a head start. Drink down a little spirituality, right? Pick yourself up a little bit with wine, perfectly okay. To get buzzed a little bit off the wine, no problem at all. To get drunk at the table is prohibited. But a little bit of a buzz, right? That's the nature of wine. That's why it was created. Questions? Yeah.
If you make Kiddush with the grape juice, though formally it is a wine, but since it can become drunk, it doesn't seem that in this case it would symbolize this element.
Correct, but it, because it comes from the, it's closely enough related, it comes from the grapes, therefore technically, that's why it's not the ideal. Ideally, it should be wine.
Is there any hierarchy?
Yes, definitely. The ideal grape juice drink, the ideal grape juice, the ideal Kiddush drink would be wine. For that reason, the alcohol content is certainly a benefit. Certainly a plus on Shabbos. Some people, I have a lot of trouble with wine. Shabbos, I make
grape juice. Is there any difference between red and white wine?
Yeah, more at the Pesach Seder. At the Pesach Seder, you start getting into the preferences for red over white, right? Even so, red wine is always symbolic of the best drink. Okay?
Okay. Going back to work on Shabbos, I heard a rumor, I'm not sure if it's true or something, to say about that, that you can light a cigarette on pilot.
On Shabbos?
No.
You're 100% correct. It's a rumor. You're definitely not allowed to light that. On Yontif, you could light a cigarette off of a pilot light, but you got to be careful not to singe your eyebrows, right? People have done that. And you also have to make sure on Yontif that you, because you're not allowed to erase on Yontif, so you have to scratch out the lettering on the cigarettes, right? Cigarettes have lettering around the bottom. You have to scratch out the lettering on the cigarettes. But Shabbos, you're not allowed to smoke. Right, you're not allowed to smoke pot, nothing. Shabbos. And Yontif, I had a friend who used to smoke pot on Yontif. Very frum guy. He used to smoke pot on Yontif, right? Because after all, you know, you're not doing anything wrong, right? So it's a, but Shabbos you can't, right? Do coke on Shabbos, right? But no. Don't say. Do me a favor. Don't go quote. Kaplan said we should all go do coke. It was a commercial, wasn't it? Every coke has life, and everybody does a little coke. You never heard that before? Yeah.
Isn't there a preference for using oil as opposed to candles?
It would be It would be if the candles that have the wax candles, which didn't burn, the times of the Mishnah, the wax candles didn't burn as well. Nowadays, it would still be preferable to use oil, but very few people do that because it's a big pachki. The candles that we have, the wax candles that we have, are wonderful.
Please turn the tape to the other side.